We watched every movie last year. We rated every kiss and every tear. We saw Tom Cruise sucking blood. Meg Ryan hit the booze. We saw 13 with Hugh Grant and 7 by John Hughes. The critic is a mystery. No one knows what he thinks, except for Jay Sherman, who always says,
"It stinks!" How awkward.
Hello and welcome to Shermometer Critiquing the Critic, a show looking at the animated series The Critic from the 1990s, which featured the voice of John Lovitz.
But not today.
This is one of our special... Yeah, not today, no. This is a special episode tied to The Critic in the loosest way possible, in that we're talking about the popular, as of this recording, ongoing animated show Family Guy. Because on an episode of the ABCs of SNL, John Lovitz sort of says off the cuff something along the lines of he hasn't seen Family Guy, but he heard a lot of it's a ripoff of The Critic. And I think he's specifically referring to the cutaway gags, kind of ripping off The Critic movie parodies. And I thought that would be an interesting launching point for a conversation, because both Thrasher and I have a lot to talk about on this topic that has nearly nothing to do with The Critic. speaking of which, I'm Matt. With me is Thrasher.
Hello.
And before we get started, I want to give special thanks to Sean Franson. Very special thanks to Peter Monks. They helped contribute to the Indiegogo campaign that made this podcast possible. If you'd like to contribute a bushel and a peck our way, you can do so on a monthly contribution at patreon.com/matwbt. So yeah, Family Guy. It originally started airing in 1999, then was canceled after 3 seasons. And then came back a few years later because the DVD sales were through the roof. And a similar thing sort of happened with Futurama. But we're not talking about Futurama. We're talking about Family Guy. Thrasher, what are your thoughts on Family Guy? That's a loaded question, but I just want to start it there. And this is going to be, listeners, this is going to be more of an open-ended discussion. It's not going to be as tightly structured as we usually do.
Yeah, I'm going to get this out of the way. I don't like Family Guy, but more importantly, I never really liked it. I don't really want to take shots at it, but I turned on Family Guy after its first episode, and over the 3 years of its original run, I felt like I was slowly going crazy, because I think I was the only person I knew who was capable of being critical of the series.
When it launched, it was a really interesting time for animation, because for a while, The Simpsons was really the top dog in town for sort of more adult-oriented humor, like a cartoon that wasn't designed strictly for kids. And I know I'm going to have people that watch Transformers and G.I. Joe arguing with me, but as far as like primetime animated sitcom, The Simpsons was the only game in town. And then later on, shows like King of the Hill and Futurama sort of kicked off a new wave of successful animated shows.
Yeah, and King of the Hill was established at this point. Futurama was yet to come, but people had been talking about Futurama for I think over a year at this point, because it had been in development for a while.
Yes, and the Family Guy was the same network, right, as Simpsons and King of the Hill, and they were looking for stuff to fill their animation block. What's really interesting is Seth MacFarlane pitched Family Guy the same time that Mike Judge pitched King of the Hill.
And they
and they went with just King of the Hill, and then Family Guy sort of came along later. But Seth MacFarlane, I think the creator, and I'll go on the record, I enjoy Family Guy, but I've not kept up with it as I probably should. I'm not the most faithful fan, but Seth MacFarlane's a pretty young man for creating so many animated shows. He's only 43 years old, and he went to RISD, Rhode Island School of Design, and learned how to do animation the old-fashioned way, by hand. And one of the most interesting Family Guys you can see is on, it might even be the first season box set, although they didn't release it in seasons, and they still don't. They call it volumes, which is very confusing. Because it doesn't quite match up. But you can see the 7-minute pilot for Family Guy Seth MacFarlane did by hand on his drafting table while he had his day job doing animation for Hanna-Barbera.
Oh, was this the Larry and Steve short?
This was not the Larry and Steve. This was, but yeah, we should start with Larry and Steve because that's where Family Guy started. In college, he did a thesis film called The Life is of Larry, and he submitted it to Hanna-Barbera and, you know, got a job off of it. And he did a sequel to it called Larry and Steve, which aired, you know, as a Cartoon Network cartoon, the sort of the world premiere stuff in 97.
Yeah, and they would rerun that for ages. They would show those cartoon test pilots. It never was picked up by the Cartoon Network of that era. That honor went to Powerpuff Girls, Johnny Bravo, and Dexter's Laboratory.
And even, you know, Nickelodeon used to do sort of a similar thing because Adventure Time had a pilot that they would air in Nickelodeon some years ago, and it wasn't picked up. And then years later, Cartoon Network picked it up, and you know it's a smash. So, you know, hindsight's 20/20. You can never—it's always a gamble. You can't tell what's going to be a success. But you know, based on this Larry and Steve, which although the character design is different from Family Guy, it's Seth MacFarlane doing the voices, and it's the same sort of humor. I think it's fair to say.
Well, it's this? It's about this dopey, dumpy, blue collar type guy. And his dog, who is very erudite, much smarter than him, and is dedicated to keeping him out of trouble. It's just them having little misadventures in a hardware store.
Yep. And so it's worth noting, I mean, this is pretty surprising. The Family Guy premiere on Fox was shown after the Super Bowl. I mean, it was sort of the perfect storm, I think, for Family Guy to succeed early on because you have South Park was huge. There was a hunger for sort of, you know, I guess you could call it edgy, right? Edgy humor. And it was still pretty unusual. South Park was unusual with how it pushed the envelope, and Family Guy seemed to have a similar pushing the envelope thing, even though it was on network TV and not cable. So I think that made it pretty novel at the time.
I will disagree with you there.
Okay.
I don't think that it pushes boundaries. I don't think that it pushes envelopes. The core of its humor is shock. It will only push so far as it can shock the audience. When South Park does something outrageous, it is very often trying to speak to something larger than just the initial shock you have. That's just to bring down your defenses. But with Family Guy, it's all about what's the smallest thing we can do to get the biggest reaction from the audience. So, and I believe this might even be a gag from the first episode when Peter pitches a toy that is just a dildo and the character looks as much like a penis as they can make it. It's just there to show as much of a penis on TV as possible. It's not making a statement about censorship or human sexuality or a woman's right to achieve an orgasm as compared to a man's. It's just there to show as much cock as possible without saying, hey, look, a penis.
What you're talking about is the difference between a gag and a satire, I think.
Yes, it is.
Right. And, yeah, Family Guy is not subtle in its humor. And right off the bat, it got a lot of heat for just being a ripoff of The Simpsons. But I think the humor is quite different between The Family Guy and The Simpsons, even though it does, you know, it's a sitcom thing. Yes, it's a family with a fat dad that's lazy. And there's a mom, and they have a boy and a girl and a little baby and a dog. I mean, that's no accident.
The one thing where I will disagree with other critics of Family Guy, I don't think it's a ripoff of The Simpsons. The only thing it has in common with The Simpsons is that it's animated and it does center around a family. But so many shows center around the family. It's an essential part of our existence.
That's right. Every sitcom is about a family, more or less. I mean, sitcom is short for situational comedy. And Family Guy took real fits and starts there. I mean, at the beginning, they have this really labored thing where, as you mentioned, he has a job working at a toy factory, and each season they changed what his job was. And after a certain point, they just throw it out the window and never refer to it again because it was a complete waste of time. They didn't do like what The Simpsons did and have a whole, you know, you have like the boss and the coworkers as a big thing, and it's sort of not a huge focus. with Family Guy, but I was in high school at the time Family Guy came out originally.
Mm. Me too.
To age myself, and I cannot stress how crazy people went for it, boys especially.
Yeah, and I think I went through the same thing because I remember seeing the pilot for Family Guy when it premiered after the Super Bowl. And my general reaction was, well, that was amusing enough. I won't have to see this again. 6 months, this won't be on the air anymore. I was expecting it to come and go like so many other animated series that had come before it. But everyone else I knew really, really glommed onto it. And one of the things I noticed is that the enthusiasm for the show escalated very quickly from, did you see that Family Guy? It was really funny, to Simpsons out, Family Guy in. Finally, something's going to kill those yellow bastards.
There's that. There's also how Family Guy has the cutaway gags where they're watching TV and it'll... Sometimes it's a parody of something, but a lot of times it's just this sort of absurdity of... Oh, I don't know, having an episode of Seinfeld where, like, Elaine gets shot in the head 10 times. I don't think that's something they actually did, but it could have been. And that they would reference something like the Kool-Aid man bursting through the wall in the middle of a courtroom scene. And nobody had thought of the Kool-Aid man in years, and there wasn't YouTube back then, so there wasn't a way to keep on watching, you know, keep these old things alive in people's memories more. And I think that was part of the reason of the conversation of Family Guy. Also, it seems like, you know, the breakout hit character is clearly Stewie, the talking baby that sounds like Rex Harrison. Will?
I'm sorry, you cut out there. What did you say?
Oh, yeah, sure. I was saying, you know, out of the characters that were... in Family Guy, clearly the breakout hit early on is the baby Stewie that has the voice that sounds like Rex Harrison.
Yeah, people did tend to resonate with the baby. I got bored with Stewie real quick.
They did a thing early on where it was about him trying to kill his mother constantly, trying to kill Lois, and then
I'm so glad they abandoned that, because that is such a pointless, unnecessary character trait. It comes from nowhere, and it goes nowhere. And that's another thing that always bothered me about the series. In Family Guy, nothing is at stake, and there's nothing for me to care about. You know, the show, because the thing about The Simpsons, it's inevitable, both The Simpsons and The Critic, they both exist within their own realities. They're flexible realities, but there's a certain baseline that both those shows operate from. And they can deviate from that baseline. They can stretch that baseline, and then the show can snap back to it in amusing ways. But Family Guy doesn't have that. It's just whatever the writers think is funny at the time, with no thought of how anything fits together. So it's tonally very inconsistent. It never earns any emotional moment. It never really earns... No punchlines are ever properly set up. And because they never bother to establish what this show is, then attempting to deviate from anything is completely pointless.
So what do I mean? You're a man that likes show tunes, Thrasher.
I do like a good musical number.
Yeah. So speaking of which, what do you think of the Road to episodes in the style of the Bob Hope, Bing Crosby movies?
Never saw them.
Oh, you never have. Okay. Where you might like those a bit more, I think, where it's Stewie the baby and Brian the dog kind of go to a foreign locale and do elaborate song and dance numbers.
I mean, I might give it a shot. I mean, I guess that would be the thing. You know, I would challenge you to find maybe three episodes you think I might like, and I would give those episodes a fair shake. But I've seen very little of this series, and most of what I've seen has been under duress. because that's one of the things that kind of struck me is when the regular episodes started airing after the pilot, I did check a few of them out, and I discovered really on, oh, this is all the show's ever going to be. There's no point in me getting invested in this. Because it is just a gag. I've been told that this changes later, but in those early seasons, it is just a gag delivery system. There's no point to anything.
They do have more of a plot in episodes as it goes on, but they still do a lot of very gag-heavy episodes. I think I was reading an essay somewhere. I can't remember exactly where it's from, unfortunately. And they mention that The Simpsons is more like an animated radio play, comedic radio play, where there's a lot of interaction between characters. You have a storyline; it has to appeal to kids and adults. You know, it has a lot going on. And The Family Guy, it's more like you're watching an animated version of daily comic strips, where it's a three-panel gag constantly thrown at you.
I could see that, and like looking at some of Seth MacFarlane's other work, I feel like what he would much rather do is sketch comedy. If he could do a whole show that was just, you know, 1.5 to 3 minute scenes, that would be his ideal show. Because then it could just be nothing but his rapid fire gags, and you wouldn't have to worry about much of a story. Each scene would have just as much story as it needs to justify the gags.
Yeah, in fact, they did a direct-to-video, it's not a feature, but I don't know what you'd call it. They did a direct-to-video thing called Seth MacFarlane's Cavalcade of Cartoon Comedy, and that's all it was. It's animated, but it's just nothing but those sort of cutaway gags with nothing stringing them together.
And have you seen them?
I have, yeah. They had some pretty good Mario Brothers stuff. It was funny. I mean, also, you mentioned sketch comedy. Seth MacFarlane... as himself, and I don't think we mentioned this, but the creator, Seth MacFarlane, who does, I don't think he's that involved in the writing of the show anymore, but he created the show. He also voices many of the characters, including the dad, Peter, the baby, Brian, and the dog, Stewie, and as well as many others on the show, but the other voice cast that's notable, you have Chris Green as Seth Green, I'm sorry.
And he does a good job. You cannot tell that's Seth Green.
No, and I was really amused that Seth Green said in an interview that he liked, after a certain point, he stopped reading the scripts before coming in to record the dialogue because he felt like he spoiled all the jokes for himself.
Huh.
And he wanted to be more spontaneous with the delivery. Which I'm not sure if I buy that, but that's an interesting comment. As the mother Lois, it's voiced by Alex Borstein, who's from Mad TV, of course, as Miss Swan. You might know her best from that. And, oh yeah, Meg is voiced by Mila Kunis, who's the daughter who they almost never do anything with.
Yeah, she is tragically underserved in this series.
She is a literal whipping boy, or whipping girl, I should say, of the show. Like,
well, I mean, you can tell... Like, The only people that they care about are Peter, the dog, and the baby. The show has contempt for anybody else, unless they can wring a gag out of them. And I guess with Meg, they've made her so... You know what I think it is? She's the closest character to having a real human personality, and as a result, they don't know what to do with her.
You know, that could be the case, because she... has a very sad sort of school existence. It's almost like a tragic John Hughes character from one of his high school movies. And she's in this family of, you know, insane nincompoops. And yeah, it doesn't quite fit. I mean, a show just focused on Meg would be very different and perhaps in some ways more interesting. I'm thinking of, you know, the main characters and the side characters. I really enjoy the character of Quagmire. He was just the real Randy pervert that says giggity giggity.
Oh, that's a catchphrase that got old for me real quick.
Yep.
But the thing, like with Quagmire, that's another sort of for me, a tragic escalation, because he very quickly went from being, you know, just this local pervert who could be a gag machine to an outright sex criminal.
Oh, yeah. No, they really pushed that far. And he doesn't always get his just desserts. It's quite strange some of the places they take that.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's an episode where the joke is he flat out, this is one of the few, you know, the few later season episodes I've seen, he just flat out rapes Marge Simpson. But then when they cut to the aftermath in it, I guess Marge changed her mind because she retroactively consented to whatever the hell he was doing to her.
Was that in the crossover episode?
No, it wasn't the crossover episode.
Oh. I guess I haven't seen that one.
I don't know where this falls as far as the seasons go. But yeah, I think what it was is that there, you know, the Fox network particularly is infamous for this, for having animated promos for other shows scrolling across the bottom in a very distracting way of other shows. And there was an episode of Family Guy where they faked one of those for the Simpsons, and it was Quagmire comes out, chases off all the Simpson characters except for Marge, and then starts chasing Marge around the screen, and then you hear her, you know, saying no, stop it. He chases her off camera, and those sounds kind of continue, and there's even, like, you know, sounds suggesting violence is taking place. But then later in the episode, there's a cutaway to Quagmire's house, and he's in bed with Marge, and they both see, and she seems fine with whatever the hell just happened. It's very, in addition to, you know, being bad taste, that's just cruel to a cultural icon like Marge Simpson.
I'm a bit surprised it's the character of Cleveland and not Quagmire that got his own spinoff series.
I am sure a Quagmire series was pursued at some point.
It would have to have been, right? It's they even did an idea for one episode where it shows them all as little kids, but they're just drawn as sort of chibi, cute versions of themselves.
And that phenomenon that's been in animation forever. The young versions of established characters like Muppet Babies, Flintstone Kids, Yo-Yo-Z,
yeah,
things
right.
like that.
Right.
So, you know, at least with there, that premise is mocking something. But so really that happens. I guess this is the thing that kind of hit me. This was in college. I realized the real... Because Family Guy is a show that seems to have contempt for its characters, contempt for its audience, and contempt for having a point. And I think I realized why that bothers me so much is that I think the show does have a point. And what the show to me is about, it's about a whole world of people who can't tell the difference anymore between their own experiences and things they've seen on TV, but it's not a tragedy. And that really bothers me.
That's very interesting. Yeah, you know, there's an episode really somewhat early on in Family Guy, I think, where Peter, the father, goes insane. He basically takes a cardboard box, cuts the side out, and straps it to his head and his body, so he thinks he's watching TV the whole time, and it's real life. But he starts treating people like sitcom characters, or he goes to the pharmacy and looks at old people and says, oh, this must be CBS, and goes along, and it's very strange. And it's the one time I actually felt sorry for Peter, because the character is so foolish and they get so surreal where he'll, you know, his head will turn into a giant helicopter, no explanation, it just happens, and then on to the next scene.
And yet I feel like that's not a real big change for the show, because everyone already treats each other like they all treat each other like fictional characters on TV. There's no attempt at having any truth to the characters or their emotions. And the other thing that drives me crazy is how they, again, this may have changed in recent episodes, but in the first few seasons, they just would refuse to pick a story and stick with it. I mean, it's a classic Simpsons structure that the first act of an episode is a set piece, but by the end of the first act, the rest of the show has been set up. But in Family Guy, I felt like whatever the fucking episode was about was always in flux. Such as there's an episode where it begins as a Willy Wonka parody, where, like, if you find a golden bottle cap, you get to tour this one beer factory. And you think that that's what it's going to be about. But they do the factory, but then that's not what it's about. It turns out that when Peter gets drunk, he's brilliant at playing the piano. So then it becomes about Peter playing the piano. But then it becomes about Peter being dependent on alcohol to be interesting. But then it becomes about his relationship with his wife and what she does and does not enable. And it never... And that's something worth exploring, is what a husband and wife enable each other to do, but it never earns that exploration and never does anything with it.
It's almost as if a lot of the times it's a new storyline every time it comes back from a commercial break.
Yeah, and that really bugs me. And as a result, there's lots of great premises that don't get explored. There was another one that I thought was really a fascinating setup where Peter's son, Chris... He's, like, not that good at anything, but then through, you know, a series of mishaps, Peter discovers that Chris has the largest penis he's ever seen, and Peter realizes that his penis is on the small side, and it all, and like, what it sets up is, like, this thing about competition between fathers and sons. But that gets abandoned real early, because once that's established... It then becomes about Peter discovering that he's descended from a slave. And that whole storyline is forgotten. And that just drives me so crazy. Anytime, of the few episodes I saw, anytime I came close to getting invested in something, they would take that away.
One of my favorite episodes, and again, I have not seen a whole lot of it recently, so keep that in mind, there's two come to mind, and one is an episode that they would not allow them to release on TV, so they only had it on DVD, but later they did put a cut version of it on Adult Swim. It's the last episode of Season 3, the one that initially got the show canceled. When You Wish Upon a Weinstein.
Oh, yes. And I remember it was when Family Guy reruns appeared on Cartoon Network Adult Swim. They made a really big deal about airing the Family Guy Lost episode.
And it's really quite good and quite smart, and in fact, they got sued over it. It's about...
Really? Who sued them?
So there's a parody of, instead of When You Wish Upon a Star, it's like When You Wish Upon a Jew or something.
Or When You Wish Upon a Weinstein?
No, that's the name of the episode. But,
oh, okay.
Oh, it's called I Need a Jew, and it's a parody of When You Wish Upon a Star. And one of the composers... of the song sued Family Guy, saying they couldn't use the melody, but Family Guy, and rightfully so, is protected under copyright law.
Oh, you mean fair use.
Yes. But it ate up a few years of time and cost, you know, lots of money on both sides of the party, of course. And it was done for an episode that, you know, that wasn't released to the public until a few years after, until like the Season 3 DVD came out, and it was a bonus thing.
Hmm.
But the episode is about Peter, he you know, is having money problems, and he decides to convert to Judaism to make it so he handles money better, which is, again, a ridiculous premise. But there's a lot of, I think, smart, funny jokes in there. And at the end, he gets a lesson from his wife that, you know, success isn't just because of is not based on religion. It's what you do with your life and how you lead it. And then when he goes back to Catholicism, nuns come and beat him up at the end. But it's more entertaining, I think, than I'm making it sound. But that one's pretty good. And they also did a series of direct-to-video episodes that later were done on TV that were parodies of the original three Star Wars films.
Oh, yeah.
And they got the rights from Lucasfilm to include music from the movies, and in some cases, live-action clips from the movies, which is quite odd.
Well, that might not have been too difficult through their connection with Fox.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I think it turns out George Lucas was a fan of Family Guy and would watch it with his son, Jet Lucas. And there's a funny extra on one of the DVDs where Seth MacFarlane, in addition to, you know, being a writer and a producer and a voice actor. He can also sing really well and has come out with albums of solo albums of him covering standards. And it's him talking to George Lucas, and he says, "I'm going to whistle music from the different Star Wars movies, and you have to tell me where in the movie it's from." And Seth MacFarlane whistles on pitch perfectly, and George Lucas can't guess what the music can't remember what the music is from.
No, I guess that would explain why Seth MacFarlane ended up being involved in the Star Wars Detours project, which sadly I don't think we're ever going to see now.
Well, yeah, and also Seth MacFarlane, I think, voiced the Emperor on, what's the Robot Chicken?
Oh, that's true. And they did their own trilogy of Star Wars episodes.
Sure, right. Maybe more than a trilogy. Yeah, let's talk about Star Wars Detours for a second. I mean, this whole episode's a detour from Shermometer, which is fine. But Star Wars Detours is very weird because they paid for, I think, a few dozen episodes, right, for Cartoon Network?
From what I've gathered, they were under contract to produce two complete seasons of the show. They had a deal for two seasons right off the bat with options for renewal. And from what I've heard, two full seasons were written. The first season, I believe, was completed. All the animation was done.
But it was computer animation. The stuff's not cheap to make. I mean, Seth Green wrote it, right? It was a producer on it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people with a history doing Star Wars parodies were involved. But I mean, the idea was it was Lucasfilm doing their own parody of their own property, Star Wars, and it was every episode was going to be essentially a sketch comedy with Star Wars characters.
But I think a softer tone than Robot Chicken. Because at least the look seemed a bit younger for how the characters looked. It was a very particular sort of cutesy style. I wouldn't say anime, but it's somewhere in between.
Well, it's kind of funny because like with like their version of Princess Leia really was like almost this doll like brat. That's how the character was written. They took certain liberties with the characters, but then like Han and Chewie, they look like Mad Magazine caricatures of Harrison Ford and Chewbacca.
Ah, yeah, like the Mort Drucker stuff. Sure.
Yeah, and of course, you know, I'd love to see what they would have come up with.
There's a few trailers that came out.
Yeah, but the story goes that things got kind of held up when Lucas and Disney got into negotiations about the sale of Lucasfilm and Star Wars, and that when the sale was finalized, the project was shelved. Because Disney, two reasons. Disney kind of stopped any Star Wars thing that they didn't have a hand in, which is why all those video games got canceled and why Clone Wars came to an abrupt end during halfway through season 5. But that also Disney didn't like the idea that they had just bought a show that was ready to air that made fun of what they just spent all the money in the world to acquire.
The reason I heard why they didn't do it is because at the time, you know, Disney bought Star Wars with the clear purpose of fast-tracking Star Wars Episode 7. And because it takes place after the original trilogy, they were hesitant to air a show that would make light of the original trilogy.
Well, I don't think Detours was set in a specific time because the Emperor was a character.
Sure, but it had a lot of jokes with Han and Leia and stuff. And they didn't want something that would make the old movies seem dopey or out of touch because they were trying to do a serious multi-million dollar... I mean, I don't really agree with their reasoning, if indeed that was one of the reasons why they didn't go with it. But it's just odd you invest tens of millions of dollars. I don't know if that's even right, but certainly a few million dollars at the very least, right? To make an animated series, not to mention people's time, and then just shit can it. You just sit on it. It could at least get a direct-to-video release by now, wouldn't you think? It's mind-boggling. I don't understand it.
It's It's one of those Star Wars projects I would love to see, just like 1313. I'd love to see what that game would have been, or the X-Wing TV series that never came to completion. There's so many Star Wars projects that came so close to existing. I would love to know more about what that is. I really hope somebody writes a good authoritative book about the history of Star Wars projects that never saw the light of day.
That'd be great. I mean, as far as getting people to talk about it on the record, I don't know. There's certainly, when LucasArts got, I mean, LucasArts is still around sort of, but when, you know, they basically got shut down as part of the Disney acquisition, where they fired much of the existing staff, and now they're really more of a sort of games arm of Disney, but they don't make games in-house, really, anymore. They're more of a publisher, a smaller operation. There was a great hardcover book about the history of LucasArts, and they talk about some abandoned Star Wars games in there, but it's not in-depth. It's more of a coffee table book, right? So it's not in-depth reporting. A very good book. I need to look up and see what it's called, but... But let's go back to talk about Family Guy, and then we can wrap this up. So we've talked about Family Guy. We touched on The Simpsons. Why do you think Family Guy has had 15 seasons and, I don't know, something like Futurama has not had nearly as many?
Well, to an extent, I am perplexed because, like, I'm looking at the Nielsen ratings, and Family Guy's Nielsen ratings have really been on a steady decline since the first season. The first season got the best ratings the show ever had, and it's been mostly downhill from there, although it did seem to stay pretty steady from season 4 to season 10, which is kind of a miracle in its own right. I can only assume, especially compared to Futurama, Futurama is one of those things that maybe it's just... And I don't want to sound like an asshole, but too good for network television. A tremendous amount of care and love goes into Futurama, but Family Guy just throws whatever it wants at the screen, and it makes people laugh, and maybe that's all the audience really wants.
And it's certainly, having the sitcom sort of idea, it's about family members and their misadventures in the suburbs, right? Is a more familiar construct than, we're going to have a science fiction comedy show. So before I go back to Futurama, I want to point out the book I was talking about, Rogue Leaders, The Story of LucasArts, was written by Rob Smith, who also worked for LucasArts. Pretty good book, came out in 2008, so right when LucasArts was, you know, going through that transition.
Cool.
To their current state, so highly recommended. I checked that out at the library. It's a pretty good book. I think it runs you... I don't want to say what the price is. It's out of print, isn't it? Da-da-da-da. Oh, geez. Used, it goes anywhere from $138 to $500.
Oh, Lord.
Yowza. Yeah, hardcover. Wow. Should have bought that one for $40 at the time.
Give us a softcover edition. Come on.
Right? Or PDF or Kindle or something. Yeah. Yeah, so Futurama went on for 7 seasons. Family Guy has been on for, I think, 15 and counting. I don't know. And so when Futurama, it originally was 4 seasons, is that right, on Fox, then got canceled?
Yeah, I think it was aired as 5 seasons, but there were 4 production seasons in its original run.
And then it sort of like Family Guy, it sold so well on home video and the repeats on Comedy Central did so well that they did like 4 direct-to-video films that were re-aired as episodes on TV, and then Comedy Central picked up a few more seasons.
Yeah, and then they did, I think, three more seasons, and then a proper finale.
Did the animation sort of, you know, get not as good when it moved from Fox to the direct video and Comedy Central stuff, or was it still pretty good?
No, it was really good. I mean, if anything, in particularly Bender's Big Score and Into the Wild Green Yonder, the animation is above and beyond what they had done in the first 4 seasons.
And Family Guy Connection, Seth
looking good.
Seth MacFarlane voiced a crooner on The Great Green Yonder.
Actually, he does 2 voices. He does a Sinatra-style crooner who sings this song about you know, Las Vegas on Mars at the beginning of Into the Wild Green Yonder. And if I recall correctly, at the end of Into the Wild Green Yonder, he is the voice of the cosmic being, the Encyclopod.
Oh, yeah, sure. Okay. I haven't seen it, so I'm not sure, but...
And actually, we can talk about that. Seth MacFarlane does show up in some odd places. He plays this smarmy tooth fairy who sells bootleg gadgets in the Dwayne Johnson movie, The Tooth Fairy.
He also hosted the Oscars one year, which I think he actually did a pretty good job.
He was also the ghostly or the incorporeal German scientist in the second Hellboy film, Hellboy and the Golden Army.
Right. With a really thick, with the German accent. It's pretty unrecognizable, I think. You can't really tell it's him. He's a really good mimic. I mean, on another show that he created or co-created, American Dad, he voices not just the father who's, you know, sort of hard right Republican type, but the fish, which is a, or no, the alien, which is a Paul Lind impersonation.
Yes, the arbitrary Paul Lind alien.
But it's a very good impersonation. And I mean, Seth MacFarlane is really talented. He was did you see the Saturday Night Live he guested on?
No, I didn't even know he did that.
Yeah, it was a few years ago, and he does a pretty good job. I just think as a performer in live action, how do I put this? There's something that throws me off about his face, and I don't know if it's plastic surgery or what, or that it's too smooth, or that it's... He has a very, you know, character actor look, but he seems to want to play the lead a lot, and is... I shouldn't say a lot, because that's not even true, because he's directed 3 live-action films, and he was the lead in just one of them.
Well, you know what I think it is? I think he wants to be a member of the Rat Pack. I think he wants to
be a
1950s, 1960s entertainer, a guy who can tell a joke, sing a song, do a dance, and can just be the center of attention in whatever thing it is he's involved with.
Have you listened to any of his albums at all, or his singles?
I have not listened to any complete albums, but I have heard some of his standards. I mean, I will give him that. He can croon, but Matt, I will ask you. You say, you know, he's talented. Is it that he's actually talented, or can he mimic talent? Because so much of what he does, I feel, is just an echo or recreation of something a talented person already did. And I don't think there's anything wrong with, you know, paying tribute to things. I don't think there's anything wrong with recreating certain things. But you can't act like that's your own.
I'll say this. When Family Guy started, it was in the right place at the right time to take off like it did. Had it come out like before South Park, I don't think it would have lasted a season. And that's saying nothing to the quality of the show itself. It's just the zeitgeist of when it came out. South Park fed some of the fire for kind of raunchy comedy, if you want to, you know, categorize it that way. And Family Guy put fuel on the fire. I mean, there was a need, and Family Guy filled that hole. Giggity giggity, as Quagmire would say. That was extraordinarily dry. I apologize, listeners.
You almost needed a British accent there. A giggity.
Giggity. Giggity. Giggity. Oakley Dokley. That's The Simpsons. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, because even he did the live-action stuff Seth MacFarlane's directed has been 3 features so far. Ted, Ted 2, and A Million Ways to Die in the West. And A Million Ways to Die in the West, he does a good job of making it look like an old Western. I mean, it has good cinematography, which you wouldn't expect from a comedy necessarily. And it, but that's the one that didn't do as well. And so I am curious if he ever tries to do something autobiographical or tries to do like a Woody Allen style sort of more grounded comedy or drama, comedy, drama, murder mystery thing.
I'm not sure if he's capable of doing anything more grounded. I mean, I guess when it comes down to it, he probably should stick to his strengths.
I'd like to see him try, though. I mean, those are the sort of interesting failures, right?
Well,
I'd rather see someone swing. I'd rather see someone swing and miss.
The creative risk he'd be taking if he did.
Sure. I'd rather see. I'd always rather, even if it's the end product isn't good. I'd rather see someone swing and miss than sitting on the sidelines eating milk duds.
Hmm.
And that's not a good metaphor. And here's something else that's weird. I mean, he's one of the people responsible for bringing back the show Cosmos.
That's true, and I will forever be thankful for that.
Was the new series good? I haven't checked it out yet. I've been meaning to.
Yeah, overall, it was really good.
And what about the animation? Because he got some animation for that, right? For some of the segments?
You know, the animation I loved in part because it is so down to earth, and they do everything they can to not let it be stylized.
It's not Peter Griffin walking around explaining black holes, right?
No. I mean, it is an attempt to create animated figures that do look like their historical counterparts, and they do get some neat voices, and they don't hit you over the head with the famous voices they get. There's a historical figure voiced by Patrick Stewart, and it takes you like a few lines in before you realize you're listening to Patrick Stewart. Because he's just so understated and matter of fact.
And speaking of science fiction, I didn't even know this. This is weird. Seth MacFarlane's latest thing is he's going to star as the lead in a live-action science fiction comedy drama for Fox. There's no way this lasts more than a season, I'm sorry. Called Orville. Yeah. Follows the crew with exploratory ship Orville, set 300 years in the future. Stars Seth MacFarlane, Adrian Palicki, Scott Grimes, Peter Macon, and Jay Lee. John Favreau is directing the pilot.
This was announced like last week as of this recording, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, probably. I mean, I just found this pop-up on Wikipedia. So August? No, it looks like August. Yeah, so relatively recently. Some of the cast is like late October. So yeah, I mean, comedy and science fiction is hard. Comedy, drama, and science fiction, I wish him luck. There's not enough science fiction on television, I'll tell you that.
Is it hard, or is it that the worst examples of that just stick in our memories more because they're so bizarre? I will put it to you that
if you look
at successes versus failures, there are more shitty domestic comedies per domestic comedies than there are shitty sci-fi comedies per sci-fi comedy.
I think you don't see it that much because science fiction cost more money than other genres, with perhaps the exception of like historical or something, because you have to get all the period clothes and so forth. And so there's that, and you put the comedy on top of it, and it's comedy is just so hard to get right. But that is being described as comedy drama makes me nervous, but also intrigued.
But hey, series 11 of Red Dwarf is on the way.
Really? I thought that's, geez.
No, they did a regular series 10 last year, and they've got, and they're already there. I believe they're under contract for a series 11 and a series 12, and series 11, I think, comes out in a few months.
Does it still have that horrendous theme song?
Yes. Oh, but I love that theme song. And I love that they haven't really updated it since the late 80s.
Not even the spaceship in the background?
Well, the spaceship is CGI now.
Well, as long as we're talking about Red Dwarf, let's close out on one Red Dwarf thing, and then this ramshackle episode will come to a close.
You think that's bad? What about the time we did the episode of the sequel cast talking like Jack Nicholson?
Are you trying to sound like the Red Letter Media guy, Mr. Plunkett?
That's my Peter Griffin voice.
Oh, okay. I thought you were trying to do Mr. Plunkett or Mr. Blinkett, whatever it is.
No, he's more like this. Log on to my web zone. Would you like a pizza roll? Also, why not Zoidberg?
Sure. But I'll give the Red Letter Media guys a shout out. Not that they need it, because they're pretty popular. But they did a video on, and you shouldn't watch it until you see Rogue One, but they did a video that's on point where they re-edit footage from A New Hope to cut it in the way they cut Rogue One together to make a point of, you know, action scenes with character moments versus just making it straight action. And it's quite funny.
Actually,
but Red Dwarf...
There's another humorous recut they did where they insert a CGI character into the trailer for Rogue One in a way that is hilarious. And it's not who you think. Unless you've seen Rogue One, in which case it's probably who you think.
I do like how when some of the trailers for Force Awakens came out, someone made a fake version of it, called it the George Lucas edition or something, or the special edition, where they just like quadrupled the number of spaceships in every scene and just had it be pure chaos. There's also a great YouTube video that has all 7 Star Wars films playing simultaneously, and it's a wall of sound, but watching like all the pictures and sound, it's difficult to make through much of it without your head exploding, but it's pretty amusing to see like, oh, how much certain shots repeat themselves. And
I might have to check that one out. That sounds like an interesting experience.
It is. I, if it's not taken down, someone else probably re-uploaded it somewhere else, because with the way that YouTube is, that stuff gets taken down pretty quickly. But, okay, so we allegedly talked about Family Guy on this wacky episode of Shermometer Critiquing the Critic. Next time, we have 2 more episodes left, dear listeners. 2 more episodes, one of which is a special episode, us looking back on season 2 of The Critic, talking about our favorite and least favorite episodes. And then a final episode looking at the series as a whole.
Will it be a clip show? You'll have to listen to find out.
It will not be a clip show, because those are hard to make. Okay, so for Shermometer Critiquing the Critic, you can follow us on Twitter at Critic Podcast. This is Matt.
You don't have anything else to say about Red Dwarf?
Okay, fine. Yes. Thank you. It looks like they did special edition versions of some Red Dwarf episodes in the 90s where they beefed up the effects.
Yes.
Was that done tastefully, or is that something that they pretend like doesn't exist, or...
Oh, no, it's they don't really like... The special editions, overall, it was pretty good, because it wasn't like they spent a lot of time inserting extra stuff into the frame. They just took a lot of the exterior spaceship shots and replaced them with CGI. Because for Series 8, I think it was, they had built CGI models for all the spaceships, and they decided to kind of use those assets to make some of the older episodes look more modern. And I think this was in part because with Series 8, they finally had enough episodes to sell in a lot of new syndication markets around the world. So it's mostly just for the exteriors that they did that. That being said, the fans prefer the original look of the episodes and don't mind that some of the effects can look dated. So in all the DVD releases, it's all of those first 5 seasons, it's all the original special effects and exterior shots. That being said, I believe it's the Series 1 DVDs, one of the special features is the Japanese dub of the first episode, and that uses all of the special edition or enhanced edition or remastered edition. I forget what they called it. It uses all of the new special effects. So if you want to see what an episode looks like, watch the Japanese dub.
How odd. But that's neat when that stuff is on the disc to check out. All right. Well, on that note, I think we can bring this episode to a close. You can find out more about our show at Critic Podcast on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at MATWBT.
And you can follow me on Twitter at InternetMare.
So for Shermometer Critiquing the Critic, this is Matt.
And this is Thrasher.
Saying,
it seems today that all you see is violence and movies and sex on TV.
But where is that old-fashioned value on which we used to rely?
Lucky is a family guy. Lucky is a man who positively can do all the things that make us laugh and cry. He's a family guy.
I bet you a lot of the audience doesn't recognize that's a reference to All in the Family.
Well, yeah. I don't know whether the show is better or worse if you're very TV literate, because even I am very TV literate, and even I'm like, really? Really? They're going to spend 2 minutes doing a joke about the Maud theme song?
Oh, how about where there's this annoying, on purpose, I guess, running gag where they say, and ladies and gentlemen, Conway Twitty, and they cut to a 5-minute musical number from one of those variety shows of Conway Twitty doing a song.
Wow, that's lazy.
It is, but 5 minutes is such a long time that it goes from not funny to funny to not funny to not funny to not funny to not funny to funny to not funny and back again.